to welcome to season 7 episode 24 of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode we'll be discussing communities and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the hash UPC. Oh dear.
Didn't you say last week you'd be better at reading?
Yeah, that was last week. The hash UPC IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Laura.
Hello.
And Alan.
Hello.
It's all just going to pot when Tom is away, isn't it?
No, it's
not
fine.
Too bad.
We're muddling through.
I wonder if he's going to listen remotely. And
I think he downloaded and took the last ones with him.
Oh, right.
So he hadn't listened to them live.
Well, where is he?
Malawi.
Oh, he's going to Malawi.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Did he not mention it to you?
Yeah, once or twice. I paid to help him go.
I paid twice to help him go. He pointed out to me after the second time.
Oh, that's nice of you.
So did I, actually. Once anonymously.
So what have you been up to, Laura, since the last show?
I wrote a blog post.
Oh, what about?
About augmented reality.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
Yes, it does. I got Mamma Mia on Blu-ray.
That sounds less exciting.
It's actually really good.
I know. I get subjected to it at home.
But
is that the one with Pierce Brosnan?
Yes.
Right. Singing.
Yeah. Yes. And it comes with a thing saying Universal is 100 years old, therefore go download the app. And then it says, and it's got big stickers saying, bring the 3D movie experience. Yeah, there are side visions of, you know, you point this app at the screen and at any given point it'll give you a bit of information about the Greek island it's on or some commentary or some background.
That sounds awesome.
I thought that was only brilliant. So I followed the instructions and it starts off by saying, point it at the front of the box. So I pointed it at the front of the box. And it plays you a clip from one of the songs from the movie. And that's it.
That is it.
The entirety of it. So
wow. Inside... Did you point it at every part of the box? The inside, the barcode, everything? Really?
Well, I didn't do it exhaustively, but basically that's all it reacted to.
And it doesn't react when you point it at the telly or anything?
No. It doesn't let you zoom.
So you'd have to walk to the telly, right? Wow. So, or hold the phone on the end of a stick.
Yeah, exactly. So, so my idea was a lot better, I thought.
Yeah.
But
you should make that app.
I should. So I had a look in the app. It had Orasmo, which seemed to be some kind of technology related to it. So I Googled that and found a TED Talk.
Ah.
And the TED Talk's actually really cool. Oh. And basically, it's this idea that you take an image, you say, this is what I want this thing, this video or whatever, to be associated with, so that whenever it detects that image, whatever it is, it brings up that video. And the demo on the TED Talk's really cool because it's like it just overlays and it's almost seamlessly overlaying within the screen.
Right.
So.
Disappointed.
Yeah. It didn't quite do that. Yeah. But it didn't do what I wanted either.
Alan, what have you been doing?
I upgraded my desktop and my laptop to Ubuntu 14.10 Utopic Unicorn.
Ooh, and how's that going?
It was okay until the NVIDIA driver broke and I was left with a black screen on my desktop.
Whoops.
But other than that, it's been pretty good.
Cool.
My laptop overheats, but it did that anyway. So there's nothing new there.
Is that the one you've got with you?
No, I brought with me my little X61 running Ubuntu Mate Remix.
Is that based on 14.10 as well?
It is based on 14.10, yes. And it's running really sweetly on this little old laptop.
Cool.
14.10 seems okay. It's not dramatically different from 14.04. Bug fixes and, you know, the usual performance tuning, but not that different. Cool. Works okay. Yeah. How about you? What have you been up to?
I went to a family barbecue with my girlfriend's family, and one of her cousins told me that he had listened to the show and had installed Ubuntu on his Chromebook.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That is.
Yes. And he commented that it was really fast.
Is he a proper techie nerd?
He's, you know, interested, but he's not like hardcore.
Well, no, it just, you know, a Chromebook is not the kind of thing, you know, that your average person would install Ubuntu on, I would think.
No.
So he had some a Chromebook and nerd. He looked up, how to install Ubuntu on it, and he followed the instructions and got it working.
Sweet.
Excellent. Yeah, he commented that it was really fast because it's all on an SSD.
Oh, cool.
So it's really fast for him. The only thing that he had trouble with was that he couldn't get Flash to install, which I then worked out was because it's ARM-based.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, it wasn't
actually,
like
I think you can do that. I think there is a way to copy the Flash binary out of the Chrome install and into the Ubuntu install.
Yeah.
There is a fudge for that, I think.
Now you've told him that Mark can work out how to do it.
Yeah. So next time you see Mark at the barbecue, let him know and he'll take your Chromebook along and he'll fix it for you. Let's get on with the show.
So our segment. Sorry, I can't read and reach the sliders at the same time.
Oh, bless.
So, communities suck.
Why is that, Laura? Oh, I've gone very, very loud.
Only to you.
No, you are a little bit. So, why do communities suck, Laura? What gives you this impression?
Okay, so last week, I think, there was a news article because one of the engineers at Chef had, one of the quite main engineers at Chef had quit both Chef as a company and Chef as a project because he was getting death threats.
Right. What, from other people in the company or?
In the community.
In the community.
Yeah, because he'd instigated some different way of, or he'd implemented some different way of working, like a different process or something, I think.
Right.
And yeah, people didn't like it. So they got more than a bit mean, I think. And
what means was he getting this feedback? Was it in like patches and in the form of patches and, you know, here's something that reverts your change, by the way, die soon. That kind of thing.
That's idea, but no, I don't think so.
Here's a patch, yeah.
I can't remember. I think it was on mailing lists and that kind of thing.
I am making light of this, but it is pretty serious, of course.
It is quite serious. It was just really quite shocking that people get it's like, why would you be so mean? I mean, okay, you can get a bit stroppy sometimes and feel bad about it afterwards, but death threats over a piece of software?
It's tricky. You know, people have different boundaries, filters on, you know, what they say and different circumstances in which they'd say things. So, for example, you know, I don't think I'm unusual in that I will use different words and sentences in front of my 7 and 10 year old children than I would with you guys and on this show, and different words when we're in the pub or not on air.
Yes.
Right? And I'm pretty certain that's pretty normal, but are there people who just don't have those filters and who just think, I can say this because I believe it and you should accept it because that's my opinion and suck it because that's my opinion?
Yeah.
I suspect, yes, that is part of, that the part of the problem is that there are people who just don't see, they don't see the difference between, saying that to their friends in the pub and saying it to a stranger on the internet. But also there's a problem here that the result of this wasn't the people who are making the death threats being chastised or kicked out of the community. They were the guy who was receiving the death threats then had to leave the community because he felt like he couldn't carry on. So surely that there needs to be a better system in the communities where this is happening for identifying the perpetrators. And I mean, it might be more than anything a case of educating them to let them know that they can't speak to other people like that
and
online.
This is the big problem on Twitter at the moment with all the abuse of women in particular. It's just kind of,
so we'll come back to that in a minute because that's quite a big separate thing.
On this, I
wanted to approach Mark's thing about community. So you say that this guy, you know, works for an open source company that make an open source project, and so understandably there are contributors who you would say are part of your community, and there are users who are potentially part of your community. Do we know where this feedback, for want of a better word, comes from? Is it more okay for feedback to come from the company, the community, the users, or further beyond that? Can you dismiss like Joe Schmo, who just happens to have downloaded the Chef tarball, looked at it and said, "Well, you suck," and then sends you a mail that says, "Die in a fire." Okay, he's a random nutball on the internet. Let's dismiss that. But if it's someone who's inside your community, who you've accepted patches from, who you've communicated with at, like, trade shows or whatever.
And there's
whatever,
probably a fair amount of trust.
Yeah, and you have a relationship with these people because you're effectively working with them. Even though it's an open source project and maybe some of them are being paid for this and some of them aren't, you're working together towards a common goal of making this product better, right? Is it more acceptable to take a flack from some random dude on the internet than it is from this guy in the company? Because you can censure this guy in the company, censure, not censor. You could do something about that, where you can't really do something about someone who signs up with a random Twitter account and barks at you and then, you know, deletes it.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking, it's getting to the level of death threats. I don't think anything's more acceptable than anything else, but I can see why, like, if it was the sort of closer relationship thing, why it would be harder and have more of the kind of impact that this has had on a person than just some random guy popping up and being abusive and then going away.
So we've had to, I mean, as you know, in the Ubuntu community, we've had the code of conduct, right? And so we've used the code of conduct as a reference to say, this is how we think you should behave.
Yeah.
And that's on mailing lists, on bug reports, on IRC communications, on everything. Yeah, that covers everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who abuse other people in whatever way. And if they do that, we kick them out.
Yeah.
And we have done that. We've taken away people's commit rights. We've kicked them out and we've said, go away. And said, we've said to some people, go away for a month, go away for 3 months. We've said to some people, go away for a year, you know, and come back if if you've got a proven track record from some other community that, you know, you're not going to do this again. Shouldn't it be that those people should be told to go away rather than this developer, you know?
Yeah.
How was that managed so badly that he had to drop what he was doing?
Quit his job and leave the community.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there was something just sort of in passing in the article said that there had been complaints about community management within Chef at some point, but it was getting better anyway.
So
it sounds like they've had some problems.
Well, we've had, you know, people complain about the way the community's managed, and, you know, I've had people complain personally to me when we had a mailing list called Sounder, you remember, a few years ago, where it got quite abusive and we decided to shut the mailing list down. And they moved off to another location and they still, like, you know, firing arrows back over. And, you know, but if they want to go somewhere else and have that conversation, it's no different than us, you know, having a moan in the pub.
Yeah.
You know, having that conversation over there. But this is our territory. You know, this is our mailing list. You will observe our rules over here. And I'm surprised that they didn't have that in place. That seems like a bit of a flaw from Chef.
Yeah, and in a company, you'd have that, generally. You'd have a policy, and if you broke the policy.
Right, and well, and in a community as well. I mean, you take away people's commit rights if they, you know, if they transgress, you know.
Yeah. There's another angle of this, which I found quite interesting, which was a comment we got from Stephen Parks, who sparks off the early days of Lug Radio, some of you might know him, where he's talking about where he's been trying to contribute to small open source projects, and he's received similar kinds of abuse for his contributions, trying to help them out, trying to fix bugs, that they've basically just put him off trying to contribute to any small open source project entirely, because he just found their behavior so abusive and decided that it wasn't worth him putting the effort in to try and help them out anymore.
Right. And so, you risk that. That's a risk you take. You know, if you allow this abusive behavior from whichever direction it comes, whether it's from the contributor or from, you know, from inside out towards contributors, that's the risk you take, is you put off new contributions. Yeah. And people won't, you know, or even if it's not as far as abuse, but lack of respect. If someone contributes a patch to your product, you should review that and, you know, act accordingly. Whether it's, you know, not appropriate, then give negative feedback in whatever, or constructive negative feedback in whatever way. If it is, then you absorb that into your project, and that's great. And if you don't do that, then, you know, you're disrespecting the person who's made that contribution. I mean, it's as simple as that, going all and then levels up to, you know, death threats. But as Laura was saying, there's a brouhaha with this at the moment in the gaming community, mostly aimed at a couple of individuals who are getting a lot of flack, death threats, and, you know, and worse. Well, I don't suppose you can say worse.
And death threats to their families.
Yeah.
And people they who are supporting them.
Right. And so, for example, Anita Sarkeesian, who's been doing a YouTube series on women in gaming, mm-hmm. and some of the tropes in gaming and the way women are portrayed in video games. And she's had a lot of flack from...
continuously as well.
Yeah, it's consistent, and it's got worse with some of the more recent videos that she's had. It's escalated dramatically in the last couple of videos she's done. She gets a lot of flack, and she gets the death threats, and she's had to, you know, leave her home and call the police, and you know, this kind of stuff is just. She said it at one point when the police were interviewing her. They said, "So what is why are these people like doing this to you?" And she said, "Well, because I'm, you know, of what I'm doing." And the police officer's like, "What are you doing?" She went, "I make videos about games." It's like, when you think about it like that, it's
so silly.
It is ridiculous. This, you know, she's, you know, articulating her opinion on a video, and she's getting death threats for that. This guy was making code and is getting death threats for that. Yeah. That just seems disproportionate.
And that's kind of why I brought it back to the Twitter thing, because although it wasn't within a community in the same way, maybe Carolyn Criado Perez was getting death and rape threats. And
was that when she was trying to get a woman on the £10 note?
A woman on the £10 note. Right. I mean, it's just so ridiculously disproportionate. I mean, it's never going to be right, but so, it's just incredible that people go that far.
Well, you know, I still think, like, in terms of like concentric circles where there's you and your very close contributors, and then as you go further out and out and out, in you get, you know, people who contribute a little bit to your project, and then right at the periphery there are people who just use your project and don't contribute in any way. Whereas, you know, when you look at someone and getting flack from someone way out there at the periphery is possibly, you know, less of a problem than you getting flack from somewhere like someone nearby. Yeah. But when you look at someone like Anita Sarkeesian or any of these other prominent women who are getting flack from effectively randoms on the internet, these are not people who contribute to her life in any meaningful way. They are just random people on the internet. And I think there is a part of me that says, unfortunately, that's the way the world is. There are horrible people out there. And the problem is that the technology allows those horrible people to connect to you very quickly and easily and make their opinion in your face very easily.
Did you see the article in the week about Mary Beard and how she handles it? So she, for anyone who doesn't know, she's a classics professor in the UK, and she's been doing history programmes on TV, so she's got quite a high profile. And she doesn't do sort of lots of makeup or anything. She doesn't dye her hair and stuff, so she's had flack from mainstream critics about not looking TV like, which is bad enough. But then she gets all kinds of abuse on like 4chan and things like that. But one teenager, I think, said something really offensive to her reasonably early on, and she emailed him. She got in touch with him and asked why he'd done it and things, and it kind of clicked that maybe that wasn't a great idea. So he took her out to dinner as an apology and had a conversation with her, and now she stays in touch with him, and he, you know, if she hasn't said anything in a while on Twitter or whatever, because she's on Twitter a lot, he will get in touch and say, "Are you okay?" and things like that. And she became a person to him, I think.
Right.
But conversely, of course, his name is now, if you Google it, he's the person who sent abusive threats to Mary Beard. And he only did it the once, and it was awful, and it was horrible what he did, and he was being a horrible person. But she says he was quite young, and he realises now he was really stupid. So now she's writing job references for him.
Maybe he needs the right to be forgotten.
Yes. and it's that kind of getting through to somebody that actually you are human, and there are going to be people who just cannot get that, but then they probably can't get that in everyday life as well, and that's a difficult thing to get across. But there will be a lot of people who are just completely thoughtless and feel being nasty or see other people being nasty, but it's, you know, if you can get through to them, if you can take the time to do it, which she does.
The problem is that it doesn't scale very well.
No, exactly.
You know, when you know, you look at the abuse that someone like Anita Sarkeesian or Zoe Quinn, for example, is a game developer who has received a lot of flack when someone she had a relationship with in the past posted a lot of private information on a Tumblr blog, including screenshots of conversations and lots of details about alleged like extracurricular relationships that she had with other people. And a knock-on effect of that was these armies of people on websites like Reddit and 4chan who went after Zoe and anyone who supported her. So it's not just, you know, not just the person who's under attack. If you express support for someone who's under attack, you then get some of that flack as well. So someone like Tim Schafer, who's been a longtime game developer, posted in support of someone who was under attack. And then he starts getting abuse from people. And another game developer, Phil Fish, who's been a bit up and down over the last few years and can be quite a controversial figure, he started getting flack, and the army of internet denizens pointed their cannon at him and published loads of private information about him. So now he's shut down his game development company and shut down his Twitter account and, you know, staying away from it all. It's just horrible that all it takes is a few people to sit there, you know, at a keyboard who you will never meet and you can't take them out to dinner and, you know, wine and dine them and, you know, talk to them and show that you're a real person. I'm not saying wine and dine in terms of buttering them up, but show that you're a real person. Yeah. It's very hard to do. I mean, I've a tiny bit of this. I met one of the guys who was giving me a bit of flack. I met him in a pub and we were having a chat, and I remember seeing him in a mailing list conversation sometime later on saying, oh, Alan, yeah, he's all right when you have a beer with him. And it's like, you know,
I can't have a beer with everyone.
Well, no, exactly. Much as I would like to. So I can empathize with that position of, you know, once you meet people, things, it de-escalates things. Jono was a big proponent of when there's a big flare-up in the community, get on the phone.
Yeah.
Get on the phone and talk to them and, you know, work things out and sort problems out. I know he did that when we had flare-ups with OMG Ubuntu. Jono would get on the phone, or when, you know, someone in the community was being disrespectful, he'd just, you know, call them up, have a chat with them. And it would calm things down immensely. But, yeah, it doesn't scale. And at some point you have to put the shutters up and keep those people out. But it's very difficult when you're a public persona and there's all these people like clamoring to attack you.
I got my first ever Twitter abuse this week.
Wow.
I got asked.
That's taken a long time.
I know. I got asked in capital letters, why do you even exist?
Wow. That's nice. And what did you do to deserve that?
I'd retweeted an article about, it was a sarcastic article about don't grow up to be like Jennifer Lawrence girls because it's bad for your mental health. Right. And it goes through all the things you shouldn't do as a woman because you'll get flagged for it.
Right.
And it's blatantly sarcastic. Yeah. But the headline, possibly, you could misread. And they did. And it was two teenagers, actually, one male, one female. And I think the male one, if you look through his feed, you could tell they were teenagers. Right. But I know it's school, I think. His feed was just full of rants and retweets of Jennifer Lawrence stuff, and that was it. All he could do was defend Jennifer Lawrence.
Right. Okay.
And there wasn't, there obviously were, but somebody, I think three people replied on my behalf.
Right. Social justice warriors coming to your
just friends of mine, just sort of like, actually, that's not what it's about. Why don't you read it? Because I'd said, have you read the article? He's like, read it yourself. Okay.
Gosh. Okay.
But he started getting abusive to a friend who had just replied, who then told him to shut up, and that was it.
And see, the problem is that you go and look at his Twitter feed and you analyze, you see, he's just a kid, and and you'll probably find that in some years he would look back at his Twitter feed from, you know, from 2014 and think, oh man, I was such
I mean, I was queuing that up for if he did carry it on, just sort of saying, you know, come back when you're grown up and you see what you just said. But the other person who did it, she wasn't abusive. She was just a bit rude, sort of saying, have you read it? And it's so sexist, and you're so sexist, and da-da-da. And anyway, I had a look through her feed, and I did say, really, have you read it? And then she went quiet, and then I looked through her feed, and she'd actually deleted the tweets. So I complimented her on a kitten, and she follows me now.
So so is that the way you deal with it? You go looking for these people, and then you compliment them on their kitten pictures or something, and you befriend them. Is that's the message I'm getting?
I think that was because I'd read Mary Beard things. I wasn't just straight off rude to them.
Right.
And I think it, as you say, it's not scalable. Mm. And had I been like, I think Lauren Laverne had read the Radio 6 DJ. She'd been reading the Mary Beard thing, and she said, "I love Mary Beard, and I think it's amazing what she's doing. But my Twitter abusers can just go jump, because she just wasn't going to take the time because it's just too many people." Mm. And it's easy to sort of laugh off when it's just one person.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to know from our listeners if they've been at the brunt of the abuse in
internet
internet communities, or indeed if you have been kicked out of a community because of abuse, rightly or wrongly.
Hmm.
I'd be interested to hear about that.
And now, Command Line Love. And this week's Command Line Love...
It does less of effect when you're like...
Yeah.
Yes, so this week's Command Line Love is a way to send commands to XBMC, or now Kodi, via the command line. So as well as running its lovely full-screen interface, XBMC also has... a web service which it runs on port 8080, I think.
If you enable it. It's not on by default, is it?
Is it?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I thought it was on mine.
I don't know.
So this lets you basically send the kind of commands which you can give it with a remote control. You can also give it from the command line by sending a little string of JSON.
Is that how like a mobile phone remote control app for XBMC works?
It's how... It might be how that works, or it's also how the web interface works. So you could like log onto your server via a web interface, and you get an on-screen and remote, and that gives it, that just sends some JavaScript with these JSON strings in. Okay. So what I use this for is I have my XBMC set up so that it has a PBR to automatically record things.
Mm-hmm.
But to make sure that it wakes up in time, it has to run a script which it runs when XBMC shuts down, to set the wake-up alarm.
Right.
So I have a script which runs when it finishes recording something, which calls the XBMC shutdown command by sending one of these JSON strings, which then shuts down XBMC and shuts down the computer and sets the alarm to wake it up again.
But the example that I've got here, we took from Patrick Archibald on Google+.
Yeah.
And this one here seems to pop up a message on the screen, not actually send a command.
Oh, right, yes. So this calling is just a show notification method, yeah, and then you can send the parameters for the method.
Right. So this shows a pop-up of some kind. And the reason why I found this interesting is a friend of the show, Neil, years ago told me that he had his setup like this. He has an asterisk server at home, and that manages his phone. And whenever the phone rings, it does a lookup on the address book and then pops up a message on the TV and tells him who's phoning. So if his eyeballs are on the TV and the phone rings, he doesn't even have to get up and look at the phone to see who's phoning him, because his XBMC thing says mum's calling and he can pick up the phone, and that's rather
cool. Not.
or indeed not. If he's in the middle of a film, then maybe not. So thank you, Patrick. That's quite good. I like that, being able to send commands to XBMC. We'll put that in the show notes.
And now it's time for your feedback.
We haven't got much feedback this week.
No, we had one listener called Sam Pope.
That's a familiar name.
Yes. How did he email us, was it?
He didn't. Actually, this, it's my son.
Oh, this was direct feedback.
Direct feedback, yes. And as I left the house today, Sam said to me, on your podcast, can you please have more quizzes?
More quizzes.
More quizzes. And I said, why? And he said, can you make them easy so that I can enter and then I could win a phone
Have we ever given away a phone?
No, we've never given away a phone, but he seems to
think
we should.
Is that his way of telling you he wants a phone?
Yes,
do you think?
I think it is. His sister has a phone and he doesn't.
And you have 12 phones.
It does seem a bit mean, though.
It is a bit unfair, yes. So, yeah, Sam would like us to have more quizzes with prizes, and especially ones that he can enter.
Win.
So, yeah, maybe we'll do that, Sam.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content, and that can only mean one thing. More quizzes.
And we've just had it confirmed by Breezer in the IRC channel that the XBMC web services are not on by default.
Oh, maybe I had to turn it on then. Oh, yes, sorry, it's a menu option, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, sorry. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. And the next live show will be on the Wednesday, the 17th of September at 8:30.
Excellent. Well, so it's just going to be you and me, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, crikey.
Plus special guests, perhaps?
Maybe.
Alan's going to get onto it.
The cats, maybe Sam.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, good luck, guys.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.